Kotze below me when I've just passed Mira. It can be a climber's doom to look down, but I can't help it. Lark is coming awake, just barely. I see her large gray eyes looking up at me from Carnelian's arms. Aren't you even gonna say goodbye? My fingertips grip the cracks in the stone impossibly tight, and I have to close my eyes. A tear squeezes from each one. That was what Lark said to me on our first night out together, when she walked me home and was watching in amazement as I climbed the wall. I didn't say goodbye then. I said, until tomorrow. Now I don't say anything at all. I can't even begin to guess what the future may hold for any of us, but my heart aches with longing for everything to work out. I return my focus to the wall and manage to climb quickly, beating Mira, who curses at the unaccustomed method of climbing. For a moment, we perch on the wall. I look toward the center, where the green eye of the crystal dome glitters balefully in the night. Much more quickly than the ascent, I scramble down into the courtyard and then hurry through the house to let everyone else in. As far as I can tell, no one has seen us go inside. We should be safe here until we figure out what to do. It feels supremely strange having everyone here. I've never played hostess in my own home before, yet I find myself fussing, urging everyone to sit, get comfortable, apologizing for the mess and dust. Carnelian lays Lark down on a sofa, and then everyone unconsciously moves away from her. They don't know what to think about her. Even Ash and Lachlan, who know her well, are unsure. Is it stupid that, with fresh bruises from her fingers around my throat, I still want to trust her? Yes, says Yarrow. But I would expect nothing less from you. The house has obviously been searched. Drawers are open, papers strewn in a haphazard way. They found my hidden room connecting with Ash's. My clothes are pulled out, my mattress askew. I never had many possessions. In a pinch, it had to look like this room was a guest bedroom or storage area. So there couldn't exactly be frilly skirts in the closet or feminine decorations on the walls. No one ever came here. With such a big secret, we naturally discouraged guests. But if they had, they would never have known a girl, a second child, lived here. Still, it feels strange to be looking at my clothes, my small possessions. There's a scrap of paper on the floor, a pencil drawing. It is supposed to be a self-portrait, but I remember when my dad saw it, he got mad and told me to tear it up. What would someone say if they found a portrait of a teenage girl, obviously Ash's twin? I remember instead of destroying it, I rubbed out the lines of long dark hair and redrew it with Ash's short hairstyle. I can still see the shadows on the page where my hair used to be. I was erased. Only Ash could live, publicly, anyway. I shoved the drawing into my pocket and help get some food for everyone. The power is off, and when I open the refrigerator, there is a terrible rotting stench. But there is still canned and powdered and dehydrated food on the shelf, and the water is running, so Ash and I throw together a meal. I don't have any appetite, though. So while the others gather around the dark dining table, I wander outside. The courtyard is the place where I spent most of my life, my one small taste of freedom in my prison. I hate thinking of my loving home as a prison, but it is the truth of it. I was locked up for the best of reasons, for my survival and Ash's, but I was still a prisoner for 16 years. I hear footsteps behind me and turn to find Ash, my second self. Finally, I voice the thought that has been hovering on the edges of my consciousness for months, ever since this all began. Maybe I should never have left that night, I say. All of this, because one girl thought a courtyard was too small to contain her life. If only I'd known what my need for freedom would be, I'd have... Ash interrupts me. Stayed trapped? I don't believe that. But look at what has happened. All the death and suffering. Lark brainwashed, Mom captured, and poor Dad. I never thought I'd hear you say that, Ash admits. He was flawed, but he was trying, I say. Now he's dead because of me. The underground is gone, the second children exposed. All because of me. You're absolutely right, Ash says, and I can't suppress a sound that's half snort, half laugh. No, you're supposed to tell me it isn't my fault, that all this would have happened anyway, that I'm just... What did Pearl, Angel, say? A cog in the machine? You just want to be told lies and feel better? Like everyone else? He asks. I don't think so. I know you better than that. So it is my fault, I say miserably. Yes, but think about what that means. Yes, bad things have happened. But bad things were already happening. At least now, a few people are fighting them. Yes, the government is controlling the citizens, but now that we know that, we know how to end it. And the outside, the living world beyond the desert. We wouldn't know anything about that if it wasn't for you. Would you give up all that, not just for you, but for all of humanity, to stay safe in your courtyard? But the rebels might lose. We might be captured. Mom might be executed, or turned into someone who hates me, like Lark. Might is a powerful word. There is a lot of hope in might. Before you, we were all weak people in an unjust world, doing nothing about it. Now we have truth, reality. We know how bad things are. Because of you. He puts his arm around me. Because of you, sister dear, we have a chance. Then he whispers in my ear. And incidentally, because of you, I've fallen in love. He chuckles. I'm not the rare and seductive Rowan with two people in love with her. But I'm happy. I smile and ruffle his hair, which he hates. Which is why I do it. The things people in Eden are missing out on by not having siblings. Then what are you doing out here with me? Go inside, back to her. But maybe take Mom and Dad's room. I want to nap in my own bed one last time. And I don't want to have to walk past you and your girlfriend doing... whatever. He's made me feel a little better. But the grief and the guilt still threaten to overwhelm me. I don't let him see that, though. He wants to believe he thoroughly cheered me up. He pulls a lock of my hair, which I hate, and heads inside. I go back to looking at the stars. So much dimmer here in Eden, but that's how I remember them. The faint stars of my childhood. I trace out patterns, remembering the constellations I invented for myself, and the ones Lark told me about that night on the rooftop. I think of nights in the woods with Mira, as she taught me how to navigate by the stars. The North Star, the Big Dipper. Someone is coming, and I turn, thinking it is Ash come back. I wipe my tears away, and try to force my voice to be light, saying, "What, need some sisterly relationship advice?" It's Lachlan. When I see him, I can no longer hold back the tears. A moment later, I'm in his arms, weeping against his chest for what I have done, for what I have lost. XXVI. Is she awake? I ask, once I get control of myself, and see his face fall just a bit, when he hears that my first thought is about Lark. But that's only natural, right? I know Lachlan is okay. It's Lark who might be another person, lost to me. Not yet, he says. Flame is examining her with her handheld scanner, trying to see what she'll be like when she wakes up. She said this is a different kind of brainwashing, as much psychological as just mechanically changing thoughts and memories. She has one of the localized disruptors that can usually interfere with the center signal within a small space, but Flame says she really doesn't know what to predict from Lark. He gives me a wry smile. Predictability. Not exactly something either of you is good at. And look what it gets us, I say. I know what you're feeling right now, Lachlan says gently. How can you? I ask. Remember, I've been part of an underground resistance nearly all my life. We've never been this bold, and the stakes have never been this high. But we've had to take terrible risks before, just to survive. Don't you think I've made my share of bad decisions? Or decisions that led to victory, but also had losses? I've lost people, Rowan. People I cared about, who died because of my leadership. I know you blame yourself for everything that has happened. You blame yourself for your father's death, for your mom's capture. He takes me by the shoulders and looks into my mismatched eyes. Rowan, you are not at fault for the evil of the world, for the cruelties of people. I know, I answer miserably. But if you had heard the things that Lark said to me, that I abandoned her, that I saw her locked in the center prison and I didn't get her out. How could you? Lachlan asks reasonably. You got everyone else out, though. She turned against me because she thinks I chose you, left her there so I could be with you. If she really thinks that, she doesn't know you very well, Lachlan says. Before I can object, he adds, and she does know you well, as do I. I know how you love. It is a powerful, protective love, and it has no limits. It rankled me at first, that you love her too. Now I know it's just another part of what makes you beautiful and unique. You can love Lark. You can love anyone you want, and I don't mind. Because I know you love me, too. He's been near to me all this time, but now he closes the last few inches, and our bodies are pressed together. His kiss is amazing, like coming home. Not here, not Harmonia, but some home of the soul, the place where I can find peace and rest. I love you, Rowan, he whispers to me. And I want this moment to last forever. Of course, that is when Flame comes out into the courtyard and says, unlock your lips and get in here. Lark is awake. The guilt hits again, as if she's been watching us. Lachlan might be okay with me caring for both of them, but I know Lark isn't. We head inside, and I hurry ahead so it doesn't look like we're coming in together. With all the things to worry about, all the tragedy, I know it is silly to be so worried about relationships and feelings. But when all is said and done, if all this ever is done, that's what will remain, the connections between human beings. Lark is propped up on the sofa, still looking weak and a little disoriented. I feel an ache in my throat when I look at her and think it is emotion. No, you idiot, Yarrow says. Your throat aches because that crazy girl tried to kill you an hour ago. Stay away from her. The last thing you need is more crazy in your life right now. She has a point, and I consider leaving the room, if only to buy myself more time to feel calmer. But I steel myself, reminding myself of the Lark that was, not the Lark that is, and tentatively approach. How do you feel? I ask her gently. Confused, she whispers. She looks so lost, My compassion breaks through my apprehension, and I scoot her feet over and sit on the far end of the couch. Could be an act, Yarrow reminds me. About what? I ask Lark. Everything, she says, with a little sound that might almost be a laugh, though she chokes it back with a moan of misery. Well, I say, let's see if we can narrow it down. What part is most confusing? I can tell she's mentally going through what must be a pretty long list. You, she says at last. Do I hate you or love you? I can feel Lachlan watching, listening from nearby, an amused smile on his face. How can I answer that? The short answer, of course, is yes, but I think she needs more than a short answer. And with everyone's eyes on me, this isn't the time. I'm desperately afraid of hurting her more than she already thinks I have. Blushing, I bow my head, but Lachlan answers. You love her. There's no doubt about that. Almost as much as I do. He winks at her. Yeah, there's one thing I'm not confused about at all, Lark tells him with narrowed eyes. I don't like you very much. She turns back to me. Could you sit over there? She points to a chair across the room. This isn't very comfortable. I try to tell myself she means physically comfortable, that she wants to stretch out. But I know that's not what she means. What does she feel when she looks at me? Is all of Chief Elena's implanted hate still in there? Crushed, I relocate, and Lark speaks mostly to Flame. It appears she's on her side, for now. No idea how long it'll last, Flame admits. The algorithms the Chief used are a bit fuzzy to me. Maybe to her, too. This is all still experimental. Lark's epileptic episode reset her brain, for now. And I think, mind you, that my disruptors will keep her head clear for now. But for all I know, she could revert back to the mind control any moment. I can tell Flame is supremely frustrated to not have concrete answers. She's used to being well-informed, and right. Lark won't look at me. She appears as nervous and uncomfortable as I feel. Whatever your plan is, you have to act soon. Now. The Chief is getting ready to attack the rebels. We know, Lachlan interjects. And we're ready for them. We have fighters ready to... Flame shushes him. We think she's mostly her old self, but don't trust her with too much information, she cautions. No, Lark says. I don't mean eventually, someday. I mean now, tomorrow. As soon as the sun comes up, she's sending almost every one of the green shirts and security bots to the border of the outermost circle. They'll be in position by noon. She said... Lark breaks off, and finally glances at me before saying... She said they're not to take prisoners. You mean... I ask. Lark nods. She's going to kill them all. Would she really do that? Ash asks. All this time, she's claimed she's controlling people to preserve humanity, same as Egopan. Power has gone to her head, Lark says. She just wants control and will take out any opposition. At this point, she doesn't care if she kills thousands if it means no one gets in the way of her controlling the rest of Eden. She's insane, I say. Exactly like Aaron Albaz. We have to warn them, Ash says. If she's attacking in the morning, I doubt we could get through, Flame points out. There will be patrols, increased security. They wouldn't do it, Angel says quietly from her corner. She might not be the domineering Pearl anymore, but her soft voice still commands attention. Even if they are police and soldiers, even if they follow her command, they wouldn't kill their own people. Life is sacred. We all believe that. They may attack, may capture the outer circle, the people, but they won't kill them all. Ash nods in agreement. Most of the rebels aren't fighters. They're everyday people, families, old people, children. Some of the rebel fighters might die in the battle. We're all prepared for that. But even if the worst comes to the worst, the children and families will be spared. Rainbow is out there, and the other kids from the underground. I can't believe anyone would kill them deliberately. But then, I never could have believed that the peace-loving people of Harmonia could kill Lachlan just because he was from Eden. Once someone is labeled a threat, I guess it is easier for some people to look at them as less than human. That makes them easier to exterminate.
You don't understand, Chief Elena, Lark says urgently. Even you, Rowan, you've been under her control, but she's become so much worse now. I've heard her talking about the rebels like they're vermin. She plans to exterminate them. She says they're a negligible fraction of the Eden population, that the human genetic diversity won't suffer for wiping them out. In fact, she says it will make the surviving humans stronger.
Easier to control, you mean? Flame says. The ones she's manipulating are the ones with the most susceptible brains. The rebels are the ones genetically better at resisting mind manipulation. Wipe them out, and there may never be another uprising again.
Exactly, Lark says. Which is why you have to stop her. Too many people have died. You can't let more die.
The green shirts are under mind control too, I remind them. They might be soldiers, but they are still people, citizens of Eden. They have to believe that Eden is about preserving human life. I bet if we shut down her mind control, the soldiers themselves would rebel. If they had the capacity to realize what she's making them do, there'd be a mutiny.
That means we have to attack tonight, Lachlan says grimly.
Yes, I say. If we can shut down the mind control broadcast, who knows? The green shirts might join the rebels. We can save them.
That sounds awful pretty, Rowan, Flame says. But it's impossible. We got the seed so that a team of 100 people could plan and train for weeks to launch an attack that was already suicidal and probably doomed to failure anyway. It's the Bicking Center. This little ragtag group can't just march in and...
Maybe we can,
Lachlan says, halting his pacing abruptly, a light of hope illuminating his face.
In fact, right now, and only now, may be the one time we actually can. Explain,
Flame says. I understand what he means, and jump in excitedly.
This is the one time the center will be lightly guarded.
The only way she can hope to take the outermost circle completely is if she commits all of her forces.
Exactly,
Lachlan says.
It won't be easy, but with most of the forces elsewhere, it might just be possible. Getting in will still be a problem, though.
I can get you inside, Lark says.
How? I ask her. I remember when she helped us break into the center before, through the sewers, and I can tell she's thinking of those days. So dangerous, but somehow more simple. Her eyes shift away again. Do you have access codes?
Some, but the easiest way is if I just walk you right in. I go to see Chief Elena, or one of the psychologists or doctors once a week, sometimes more often. She's had me bring some of my friends from school. Well, people from school. I don't think I have any friends. I'm kind of a terrible person, I think.
Does she experiment on them, too? I shudder, as Yara remembers her ordeals at the chief's hands.
Not really. She gives them psychological tests, I think to see if they'd make good candidates. Like me, or you, Pearl.
For a moment, Pearl doesn't react. Then she sees that Lark means her, and she says,
Sorry, my name is Angel.
No one told her? Lark asks.
Told me what?
We knew you. Rowan and me.
You're another victim of Chief Elena.
This isn't the way I wanted her to find out, I say hurriedly. Pearl, I mean Angel, I'm sorry I didn't tell you about your past. I will, I promise. As soon as we have time.
She gives me a look I don't expect. One of calm acceptance.
Thank you, Rowan, but I don't want to know.
What?
I like who I am. I'm happy with what I'm doing. I don't remember my past, but I don't think I was happy then. I feel like this is who I'm supposed to be.
She looks at my brother, who gazes back with loving eyes.
And who I'm supposed to be with.
She gives a little laugh.
Anyway, when would you ever have time? We have an invasion to thwart, and a government to topple.
She turns back to Lark.
Now, you say you can walk us right in the front door?
Well, not the front. I use the staff entrance, but...
She can't come with us, Flame says. Are you crazy? She's okay now, but for how long?
Look, Lark, when this is over, I'll try to fix you. Permanently. But for now, with the center on attack, we just can't have someone who might randomly turn into an enemy spy at any moment.
But I want to help. I need to help you, to make up for the way I betrayed you. Rowan, I'm so sorry I hurt you. And, oh, your dad. I remember when I'd visit Ash. I didn't come over very often. Of course, they were hiding you from guests, but whenever I did, he was so nice to me.
She needs to come with us, I tell the others. She's our best chance of getting into the center and putting a stop to the woman who killed my dad. It's the only way we can set every one of the people free. I want that to be my father's legacy.
I agree, Mira says. We need some advantage against these forces, and she's our best chance.
Lachlan glares at Lark.
She comes. She helps us. And at the first sign of treachery, I snap her neck.
I see a shiver travel through Lark's body, but she nods.
If I betray you, that's exactly what you should do. But understand, I won't betray you voluntarily. If she takes over my mind again, if I become a danger to you, then I want you to kill me.
She locks eyes with me.
In fact, I beg you to kill me if that happens. I don't want to live like that.
We go at dawn,
Lachlan decides.
That will give us time to plan and rest before the troops move away from the center. We can keep watch from the wall. As soon as they pass, we head in the opposite direction, toward the center. Flame, Carnelian, I want you to go over exactly how you plan to disable the mind control. Carnelian has the skill to be a good tech backup.
Are you sure you know how to disable it, Flame?
I'm not sure of anything, Flame says. But the seed will unlock it, and I can reprogram or disable it for a while anyway. Once I'm inside, I hope to be able to find the resonator that is broadcasting the signal. If I can, I can stop it for good.
Lachlan nods.
Lark, Rowan, you both know the inside of the center better than anyone. We need to plan exactly how we'll make entry, the route to the control station, and what kind of resistance we're likely to encounter. As soon as we shut it down, we can go to the prison wing for your mom.
We plan fast, Yarrow helping me recall things about the center I'd rather not remember. We draw a map and go over and over our plan. It is a simple one, relying on Lark bringing us in unopposed, and then surprise and brute force. People will die in our plan, but more people will die if we don't succeed. The whole time, Lark talks to Lachlan, or I talk to Lachlan. If at all possible, Lark and I don't ever address each other. The tension of our avoidance is almost as bad as the tension of planning for battle. When it's only a couple of hours before dawn, Lachlan says,
Everyone should try to get some sleep. It will be a challenging morning.
Ash and Angel go to our parents' room,
Mira and Carnelian cuddle on a chaise. Lachlan stretches out on the floor, while Flame paces. I go to my room and flop down on my old familiar bed, burying my head in the pillow that smells like my childhood. How strange it is to see my old things. It feels like so long ago that I left. I see more of my art supplies in the corner, and even though I'm dead tired, my curiosity gets the better of me. I pull Aaron's journal from where it is pressed against my skin under my clothes, and paw through my supplies until I find a piece of ochre-colored chalk. With the lightest of touch, I brush over the inside back cover, gradually revealing the imprint of words written more than a century ago. I can't read every word, but by shifting the page at all different angles, I can decipher most of it. My end is near, and when my body is no more, I join. I will be buried with my child. Where the feet of the Colossus tread on the sea, amid flowers of every land, there lies the heart of Ecopan. There my child was born, there his cradle, there one day his grave. There the very language of his existence is stored, the code of his creation and his destruction. When my child is no longer needed in this world, it is there that he will die. I don't immediately understand it. Aaron had a child. But I am too impossibly sleepy to puzzle it all out. And a moment later, my heavy eyes close. I wake up with a hand over my mouth, a pressure on my body. My eyes fly open. Lark is straddling me, and I can just dimly see her finger pressed to her lips. Has she come here to finish the job she started earlier? Is she going to try to kill me? She takes her hand from my mouth and leans so close I can feel the warmth of her breath on my lips. So close. She dismounts from my bed and holds out her hand. When I don't take it right away, she beckons wordlessly. We slip silently out of the house into the courtyard. Now that I've been in the living world, it seems so strange to be outside at night without the sounds of crickets and nightjars, owls and cicadas. The silence is unnatural. I guess she's not planning on killing me. But why are we out here when we should be resting for the coming mission? I have my answer when Lark suddenly shoves me against the courtyard wall, cradling the back of my head with her hand to protect it from the stone. Again, I brace for an attack, but her body is soft against mine. And then she's kissing me. Suddenly, everything is simpler, and I'm back to that happy moment of our first kiss. It was confusing and delirious and blissful, but pure and easy, too. Oh, Rowan, I've missed you so much, she says breathlessly a moment later. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. She releases me to clutch her own head, and I notice that she's crying. Ugh, I can feel thoughts in my head that aren't mine, or like some wicked version of me. I know you still have parts of Yarrow in you. How do you stand it without going insane? You remember me, and us, and... I prompt. I remember meeting you, everything we did together. I remember getting eaten by the nanosand, and then... There's a gap. Somewhere in there, everything got turned around. Everything that mattered to me changed. When Chief Elena was talking to me, everything suddenly seemed so clear. I hated you, hated the second children, wanted to do everything I could to keep Eden safe. You always wanted that, I point out. But it came to mean something different. I was not a good person. And now, I'm still not, I think. Or I feel like I'm the old Lark, and the new one.
both at the same time. But I'm scared. It's like the new Lark is sleeping for a while.
She sits up and clutches at my hands in a panic.
I don't want the new Lark to wake up. She's a terrible person.
The chief changed you, I say as I hold her hands.
Like she did to you? But I remember who I am.
Flame said she used a different method on you, I tell her. She said she can probably undo it with a little time in her lab. But right now, she thinks your epileptic seizure reset your brain. Your old self came to the fore again.
Will she stay?
We don't know.
I don't want to be that person, Lark says miserably. She's not me.
The chief said she just massaged parts of your own thoughts, your own psyche, I tell her. She didn't add anything.
How do you know? Lark asks. I don't really know what she did to me, and Chief Elena isn't exactly known for her honesty.
She would be likely to tell me the thing that would hurt me most, that you decided to turn against me of your own free will, that the hate was within you all the time.
It wasn't, she says. I swear it wasn't. I hate that even now, in the back of my head, all those disgusting thoughts are lingering.
She clutches her head, like she can hold it all in. Never let me see it again.
We'll fix you, Lark. If you can just hold on to yourself for a little while longer, Flame will make you like you were, permanently. And we can go to the outside world, and...
I break off, thinking of my love for her and Lachlan. How I must be doomed to make them unhappy. Unable to choose, or else make myself unhappy.
I talked to Lachlan while you slept, Lark says, reading my thoughts.
We talked about you, how we feel about you. He's an okay guy, you know. It looks like it almost hurts her to admit this.
Will you do something for me, Rowan? She whispers in my ear. Will you tell me about the outside world? In case I never see it?
You will see the living world, I vow adamantly. And I'll be with you. I promise. Then, nestling close to her, I tell her about the wonders of a butterfly, the beauty of a flower. I tell her about the cheerful, melodious little birds that are her namesake. She interrupts me a moment later.
I need to tell you something. Now, while I'm still myself. I don't know how long it will last, and I couldn't bear it if I became that horrible other version of me, without you knowing. Rowan, I love you. From the night we met, and every night in between. Elena might take away my memory, or implant some new personality, but she can never change the truth of my heart. I need you to remember that, in case I ever change. In case I turn against you. I feel a warmth, joy, deep in my heart. It's a feeling that makes the world look rosy, in spite of everything that has happened. Oh, Lark, I love you too. I breathe. And kiss her like the night will never end.
We are all awake and restless at dawn. I doubt any of them slept more than I did. I feel alert and alive, full of determination. My nerves held at bay by the stunning things Lark and Lachlan said to me. It feels like a great weight has been lifted off my shoulders. And I am buoyant, energized. All I have to do now is launch an attack and rescue mission on the most tightly guarded place in Eden. Our plan is simple. Just walk in. Lark says she has brought other kids to the center on several occasions. Ever people from other schools? I ask her. She hasn't, but there's a first time for everything. It will be plausible, Lark says, hopefully. Chief Elena wants to see any promising candidates, but she didn't specify just from Oaks. Our scheme is to all dress in Ash's old uniforms, posing as kids from the Sahara School. It's not quite as lofty as Oaks, but it is a very good school, and Chief Elena would probably be interested in candidates from those wealthy, important families. They are elites, too. Her philosophy seems to be to co-opt the wealthy and educated, and crush the lower classes. We're all in Ash's old golden sand-colored uniforms. Angel seems to have a moment of confusion when she looks at herself in the mirror. Is she remembering her old Oaks uniform? Or, if she's not remembering, is there just some small spark in her brain that tells her something is off? I wonder if she'll ever get her memories back. I think brains are too resilient to be beaten down for long. The clothes are too short for Carnelian, but passable. Mira loves her outfit. Perfect for climbing, or fighting, she says of the fitted tunic over leggings. The only difficulty is Flame. She is small and trim, and easily fits in one of Ash's old uniforms. But she is obviously in her 40s. She'll never pass for a young woman. I can be the suspicious parent, Flame suggests. The one who assumes you'll be taken advantage of. No, having an adult there will raise alarms, Lark says. Is there anything we can do to make her look younger? She holds up her hands quickly, afraid of offending the woman she is relying on to fix her addled brain. Not that you look old or anything. Flame snorts. I own my age, thank you very much, kid. But you do have a point. Angel has been studying her. Do you have any makeup? I don't know why, but I just have a feeling I can do something. The pearl is coming out, I murmur to Lark. When I check the drawers of Mom's mirrored vanity, though, we find something even better than makeup. It's a device with the same sort of simulator that kids use to give themselves tiger stripes or snake eyes. But this one is marketed for adults. Concealed in a headband is a highly sophisticated projector that creates the illusion of youth without surgery. When Flame pushes it down over her red hair and turns it on, her skin is immediately dewy and youthful, the lines around her eyes smoothed. The illusion is perfect. She looks no more than 18. Godlike technology, and this is what we use it for? She gripes, looking into the mirror. Yet, I see her smile at her own image, even if she tries to hide the fact. At least if I die on this mission, I'll make a beautiful corpse. Though our nerves are all on edge, we can't leave right away, and the waiting is the worst. Over and over, I climb the inside wall of the courtyard and cautiously peek at the surrounding circles of Eden. For a long time, everything is quiet, unnaturally quiet. The streets are empty, and I wonder if the center sent out a notice keeping people inside, or if it was some tweak of the mind control, making the populace so indifferent that this morning they don't even bother getting out of bed. Finally, I hear a sound coming from the direction of the center. I duck back and beckon the others over, then peer over, reporting what I see. The bots are coming first, I say. Security bots. These used to be mostly sentinels, keeping an eye on things to make sure there were no crimes. They would report, and at most apprehend. But more recently, all security bots were armed. They were supposed to be under the control of human handlers. They aren't supposed to be able to make independent decisions about lethal force. But at this point, I'm not sure. They might be programmed to open fire without specific instruction. Bots wouldn't have any problem slaughtering the Outer Circle rebels. They will simply do what they are told.
Of course, until we manage to interface with the mind control, the green shirts might well do the same thing.
The green shirts are behind them. I've never seen so many.
How many are there?
Lachlan asks.
Hundreds.
I didn't know there were so many in all of Eden. And this is just one segment of the circle. They are expanding from the center in all directions.
They must have been recruiting a lot more.
There are thousands of rebels,
Ash says.
Maybe they can...
We don't have many guns, Ash, Lachlan says grimly.
And too many civilians, you know that. If we don't succeed, the rebellion dies.
I watch in terrible fascination as the army approaches. The men march like machines, looking even more frightening than the security bots, because I expect them to show humanity. I've seen and talked to green shirts, and though I've always been afraid of what they would do if they knew what I was, most of them have just been ordinary people, doing a job they thought was important. Now this army of ordinary men and women in their green uniforms are marching out to slaughter children. To kill people who just want their freedom. When they get near, I climb silently down. We can hear the sound of them marching by. Just footsteps. No talking. No singing. It is unnatural. Crossing to the other side, I watch them until they cross to the next circle. It's time for us to move.
There were so many, I marvel. There can't be a lot of them left in or near the center.
I hope you're right, Lark says. The way I go in, there's a security station, but there's usually just one guard. He likes me. He says my hair reminds him of his granddaughter. We step out of my house with great trepidation. I feel like a deer entering a clearing where a wolf pack might be waiting to charge me. But nothing happens. We try to look normal, natural, like kids heading to school. But I'm sure we look stiff and weird. But there's no one to see. The streets are still deserted, and there isn't a single green shirt or security bot to be seen. One little clean bot scuttles across the street in front of us, sweeping up detritus left in the wake of the army. It is the only activity we see all the way to the center. It's eerie. It feels like a trap.
I almost wish they would attack, Lachlan says. It's harder pretending to be casual, smiling like I belong here, than it is to fight. For me, anyway.
Mira, too, looks on edge, her fighter's body yearning for some activity. We cross through the main center gates without being challenged. This is just weird, Lark says as we walk across the open grounds, which are dominated by a statue of Aaron Albaz.
All the guards, all the soldiers, are on the march,
Ash says.
And she's not at all afraid of attack?
Flame wonders. She thinks she's in complete control, I say.
She thinks she's won. What does she expect us to do? Once we were routed, Mom captured.
Why, run back to the rebels, of course. She'd never imagine we'd still be here. She'd never dream we'd dare attack. She feels perfectly safe.
Is she even here? Lachlan says.
She might be leading the troops.
Put herself in danger? I ask.
I don't think so.
Maybe we can just waltz in and do all this without any opposition, Mira says.
Dream on,
Flame mutters as we push open the back staff door and see a security checkpoint with a desk and an empty chair. As soon as I enter through the door, I hear a faint buzzing in my ears. Or is it a vibration in my body? I don't know. If I was in Harmonia, I'd think it was a mosquito, a barely perceptible sound, a stir in the air, just at the periphery of my awareness.
I hate this place, Yarrow says, sounding small and frightened, even in the safety of my head. The center is sterile, stark white, polished and shining. A pure, clean place where terrible things happen. The guard's not here, Lark says. This is crazy. I'm so suspicious. Is this a test? How could it be possible that, even in the middle of a war, we find this place undefended? I hear a toilet flush, and immediately, a portly, elderly green shirt emerges from the bathroom. Flame hunkers behind Carnelian, so the guard can only see her youthful figure and not get a good look at her face. Will the trick hold? Maybe, as long as the guard doesn't look too closely.
Oh, Lark, my dear. What have we here? Enemy spies?
He sounds suspicious, and I see Lachlan's hand reach for his gun. I touch his fingers with mine, stopping him. The old guard is just joking. Lark laughs.
Same as always, Jasper. Bringing in the youth of today, the leaders of tomorrow, to take all your jobs.
She raises her hand in a fist above her head.
Crush the old order!
She giggles, and Jasper gives a hearty laugh.
Oh, we're in trouble now, Missy.
You know it, Jasper. I'm going to have Chief Elena's job before long. Better tell her to watch her back.
She winks at him, and he chuckles. It is obviously a familiar kind of banter.
Okay, then. That's the chief's lookout. I'll just check your friend's IDs, and you can get on with your job of taking over Eden from us old-timers.
I feel a shiver of panic run through me, though I manage to keep my cool. The fake identification attached to our temporary lenses can hold up to an oak scan or a street corner camera, but I think that a more sophisticated center system will see through our deception. We're going to have to fight, and I really don't want to have to kill this jolly old man. What's more, if the fighting starts this soon, we'll raise the alarm. Even if there are hardly any green shirts and guards here, there must be someone. We have to get to the center's control room before anyone is the wiser. And then, rescue my mother. Jasper takes out a handheld scanner and approaches Lark. She leans in, then jerks her head back abruptly, a little sneer on her face.
Jasper, I didn't hear the water running. I know you aren't about to scan us without washing your hands after you use the bathroom.
The old guard flushes the bright scarlet of a poppy flower and stammers awkward apologies. All at once, their relationship is shifted. The easy camaraderie is gone. Lark draws herself up regally and makes it clear that she is an elite, rich and privileged, and he is no more than a servant. An underling. The jokes are over. He is beneath her. Cringing like a beaten animal, he slinks away. As soon as we hear the water running, Lark gives a shrill laugh and beckons us down the hallway.
Oh, that just killed me to do that to Jasper,
she whispers to us as we pass unchecked through the gate.
But he'll be way too embarrassed to call us back now. Oh, poor old Jasper.
The fact that this upsets her is promising. She's still the original Lark, kind and considerate. I wonder how long it will last. Maybe forever, Flame said. Or she could revert to her nasty state at any moment. As uncomfortable as it was for her, it is a boon to us. We sail through. And though we pass some people, scientists, bureaucrats, they all assume we've already been vetted and don't question our presence. There aren't many people, though. Are they all involved in the attack, or are we just getting lucky? Maybe there's a meeting somewhere. We move down the echoing, stark white halls, led by Lark for the first part, then Lachlan takes over. The faint buzzing in my head continues, and I try to ignore it. I'm last of the group,
My very feet seem reluctant to go any deeper into this building where I was tortured.
What was that?
I gasp, alarmed, whirling to look behind me.
What's wrong?
Lark asks. I could have sworn I heard a whisper from just behind me. But there's nothing there. I shake my head.
Nerves,
I say.
It's right up ahead,
Lachlan tells us a moment later.
Are you ready?
We all have weapons. Small, easily concealable guns. The lethal kinds. Since this was originally just supposed to be a quick infiltration of Oaks, I voted we all have stun guns. It was Lachlan who insisted on real, deadly weapons, just in case. We don't want to use them, he said, but if we have to, it is going to be serious. Our lives or theirs. He's been proven right. If we'd just had stun guns, Chief Elena would have won. And we can be sure that if anyone opens fire on us from in here, they'll be using real weapons. Lark is the only one without a gun. I argued that she's in as much danger as we are. Flame reasonably pointed out that there is a very good chance that at any moment, Lark might point the gun at us instead of our enemies. Even Lark agreed to be unarmed. I take a deep breath, and Yarrow seems to as well.
We go in hard, Lachlan says. No hesitation, no mercy. Go!
He flings the door open and charges in, aiming his gun, a grim look on his face. We follow close behind him.
I've steeled myself for blood, for slick red against the stark white.
Inside, there is a filing cabinet, a rolling table. A clean bot whirs softly in the far corner, sweeping up dust. It swivels when we storm in, but since we aren't garbage, it ignores us. There are no people.
When you're geared up for fighting and death,
a lone clean bot is kind of an anticlimax. All that adrenaline and nothing to do with it makes me feel shaky.
It's not here, Lachlan says. It's supposed to be here.
He consults the hand-drawn map, confers with Lark.
It was here,
Flame says. She points out places where the data storage blocks must have been, the power connections and cooling systems of a significant control center.
She must have had it moved to a bigger room. Once she started upgrading the system, she needed more output, more power.
What are we going to do? Angel asks. Lark is biting her lip, deep in thought. I haven't been all over this place, but there is one room. I remember I was there for a physical about a month ago. It was a big place, with treadmills and medical devices, but it was in disarray. Stuff out of place, empty spaces. I thought at the time they were upgrading it. But maybe they were emptying it to relocate this control room there. It was definitely bigger.
It would have to be not only big, but set up to use vast amounts of power, to store vast amounts of data.
Flame muses.
A medical room might take a whole lot of work to retrofit.
Yarrow remembers something too, I say, before I even realize she's taking over. When Yarrow thought, that the chief was her mother, she went with her once to her private office. It was next to the prison wing, a huge room.
It would take more than just space, Flame reminds me.
She told me, bragging, that it was the most technologically advanced room in all of Eden. She said she had big plans for it, but when I was there, it just had her desk and files. But I remember it was set up with extensive data access points, and I think it could have housed what we're looking for.
We need to split up and check both,
Lachlan says.
If we don't find it soon, we'll get caught. Flame, which do you think is more likely?
She considers.
If I were the chief, I'd want to execute my evil plan in the comfort of my own office. It's in the center of the center, right under the dome, as far from the vexing populace as possible.
And the most heavily guarded area, I say.
Usually, Ash reminds